Robin Miller, we have another week in IndyCar. We are jumping into the third consecutive weekend of IndyCar, heading to Watkins Glen. But we're coming out of a gateway event that I loved, you loved. I would say it was the oval equivalent of what we experienced last year, 2016, on IndyCar's return to Road America, where it was just love, huge crowds, and an overabundance of feeling really, really good that something's heading in the right direction. So tell me about your thoughts, brother, of looking up and seeing grandstands packed, and especially some really good racing towards the second half of the event.
Well, just I think Curtis Francois and Chris Blair and John Bissey, those guys are, their efforts and their hard work and the fact that they went out of their way to keep stalking IndyCar to give them a chance to have a race, and it paid off because this is exactly what IndyCar needs. If you're going to have an oval race, you better take these guys' template and do how to do it. I mean, John Bomarito as the title sponsor, Bomarito Auto Group, was phenomenal. I mean, they probably wouldn't come close to the success they had without him, and they're the first ones to tell you that. But I just like the fact that from day one, the first time I met Curtis, and he said, "Do you think you could get me an audience with somebody in IndyCar?" And Jay Fry took the bull by the horns. I just think that he was dead set on showing people I can promote races and we can make it work in Gateway. And by God, he did. And it was an atmosphere. I mean, when the mechanics are impressed, that's my gauge, and they were all impressed.
So if we look at impressive, we have two drives that I would say stand out. Obviously, race winner Joseph Newgarden and the middle finger of destiny shown to his teammate and the rest of the field with that amazing turn one pass. Then there's also Scott Dixon, and I'm not sure which performance I would rate higher at a track where we expected the Chevys to kick butt. They absolutely did. They were clearly the dominant package, and yet Scott Dixon, miracle worker in a Honda with Chip Ganassi, is working his way forward. Wasn't really in a position to challenge Newgarden for the win, but if you consider the fact that he was second for Honda, and there was a little bit of distance to the next Honda in line, that also stood out to me as one of those, how the heck did he do that? Which one of the two do you think was more impressive, or do you rate them equally?
Well, I give Newgarden and a slight advantage because sticking that thing in there with as little room as there was, but knowing that that was his best chance to win the race and going for it, it's why people come to races. It's why they watch them. It's exactly why anybody wants to drive a race car, to make that move I'm not sure Pagano really thought he was going to go for it. I think maybe his lesson would be, I'll make sure I don't leave that much room next time. Which is, I kind of wish he'd have said that after the race instead of that he didn't respect Joseph. I'd like to see him say, you know what? I don't know how he got by me, but it ain't going to happen again because I'm not going to ever leave him that kind of space. That's, to me, the essence of racing is what we saw with Joseph. And Dixon is just, he's phenomenal. He can get whatever the car's got, wherever they go, that's what he does. And he does it so well. And I think that's the first thing I ask him in the victory and the post-race celebration is, how the hell did you do that? And he's just like, man, I'm not sure. But he goes, I thought for a minute there I might be the winner after seeing those two. And I just think he's a special guy. And he always figures out a way to get the best out of any situation.
So I spoke with a IndyCar driver, someone who was hoping to beat Newgarden Saturday night, and shared my thoughts about how impressed I was. And he actually pushed back with a differing opinion and said, why the hell would you do that? You are the championship leader. You are running second. You are going guaranteed to leave here, barring some bizarre calamity. You're guaranteed to leave with really strong points. You're ahead of Dixon. You're going to extend his lead over him. You're ahead of Elio. You're ahead of Power. Obviously, Pagano would reduce the deficit a little bit, but be smart, take second, and leave here in an even, in a really strong championship position. Why the hell would you risk, this win or crash type scenario? What about that? Because that has merit. That argument has merit for sure. I just tend to err on the if you're a gladiator and going for it, you've definitely got my support. But I don't know. Do you think he got lucky? I mean, that was this dumb luck that we're celebrating? Or was this truly something where you'd say, son, don't try that again with the championship on the line?
No, I think it's a combination of things. He's young, he's brave, and he's talented. And he saw a chance to go for a win. And that's why guys drive race cars. I mean, I love the fact, I guarantee you something, Newgarden made himself so many new fans Saturday night that he has no idea how many fans he made. But I can just tell you that for every 50 letters I got in the mailbag, and the volume this week was unbelievable, there were three guys that said, I didn't like that move, and I don't like him like I used to. And there were 47 people that said, I didn't really pay much attention to him till this year, but I'm a Joseph Newgarden fan now. So, you know, everybody has a different view, and yeah, maybe it takes a little luck to get through a situation like that, but it saved the race, and it might have won him the championship.
I think the three who sent those letters were members of Al-Qaeda, so that's okay. We've identified the threat there. Our boy Connor Daly. Talk about a day in the sun, a night under the lights. How awesome was it to see the kid finally get something that worked? There was no, the cartoon anvil fell on others during the race, but for once, Connor not only got to the end, but ran strong, and I would say for Chevy, which really hasn't had a whole lot to celebrate beyond whatever Team Penske brings home, they had to be happy too. What do you think, Robin, knowing that this kid came home fifth, and it really energized his team as well?
Well, I think they were quick in the first test session, back in the spring. He was the closest to Elio in the test session after paving, and he was quick in practice. I think qualifying disappointed him because he was only 11th, but he ran strong in the race, and I think he needed that result. I think ABC needed it, and certainly think the Voigt team needed it. I think Connor's okay. I think ABC loves him. I think he's going to ride. I think he's going to be there next year, and I'm glad because you got to give you. He's a kid. He needs 2 or 3 years. To grow into this ride, and that team and everything changed. And he, like you mentioned, he's had a lot of terrible luck, but the kid can race. He's shown that he can race, whether it was for Dale Coyne or for AJ Voigt. And I think a lot of people are happy for him because he deserved it.
How strange is it for you and I to keep talking about our boy Alexander Rossi and how his oval performances, it seems, are the ones that really continue to stand out? And I'm not saying that his road and street course performances haven't been awesome, just in terms of actual results, you know, getting to the finish line with a good number. Rossi, man, for a guy who'd never been on an oval 18 months ago, is definitely showing that it doesn't matter where you're from, you can be an American like him who's never seen an oval, or you can be a European and come over, and if you've got the talent, you can definitely succeed in the art of turning left. Sixth place for him. Man, I just love to see this turn into a podium or a win on a road course to close the year so that, you know, IndyCar has even more they can promote and celebrate about the kid. What do you think? What is it about this kid, do you think, Robin, that allows him to be so effective on ovals and, you know, something he's only done, what, 10 times in his life now, maybe?
Well, I think he probably impressed most people right out of the gate at Texas last year. I mean, that was up until the first pit stop. I mean, he's hanging right there in the lead pack and looking like he's got a chance to win the race. And when you can run that good at Texas your first time, that's a little, I think that tells you right there that, you know, that's a little cut above, because that's a tough place for people to ever get comfortable on, especially even guys with some oval track experience. But I think they've got good oval track setups, and I think Jeremy Millis is really sharp guy, and I think they've clicked well, and it's only going to get better.
Wrapping up here on Gateway, very odd open to the race with our boy Tony Kanaan spinning and crashing on the final parade lap. That set some things in motion with Chip Ganassi's decision to park him after completing 168 laps of a 248-lap event while the car was fully functional, fully capable of going forward for the rest of the race. Let's just say that you and I both received calls from Chip this week saying, man, I'm getting killed on social media. And, I mean, he offered his explanation on social media about, you know, there was nothing to be gained. You know, I think the deeper reasoning for it was, You've torn up a lot of equipment this year. We know that Chip Ganassi Racing is not as flush with cash as they would like to be. They also made a similar decision with Max Chilton at Pocono. You know, part of me believes that this wasn't just we couldn't improve anymore, but also, hey, why risk tearing up more equipment when we're this far down? How did you see that situation with Tony and then also Max Pryor? And did you take any delight in Chip getting hammered on social media?
Of course, that's always fun. But I'm not on Twitter, so I missed all the good ones, I guess. Here's the thing. It's Chip's team. I told him, you know, do whatever you want. It's your team. But they're both lame duck drivers for him. They're both gone next year. So it's probably a combination of let's protect what we got. I don't have that much money anymore. These guys aren't coming back. They're a couple laps behind. It all adds up together. And you know, I've talked to TK, and he's like, you know, was I pissed? Absolutely. It's his team, though. He can do what he wants to do. But he said, you know, I think in TK's case, he's so popular, and he's brought a lot of money to that team. And I think it's just disrespectful in a lot of ways because, I mean, Max Chilton, I don't blame him for wanting to stay out for the last 71 laps of Pocono and learn, because that's what he's trying to do. And he spent a lot of money for that opportunity. It's just that the final decision obviously lies with the car owner, and he made it.
Yeah, I think the 2 points you raised there, really the only things that didn't fully add up, and I don't know if they ever will. If you look at the fact that with Max, he pays for that opportunity. I realize that Chip owns the car, owns the team, but if you think of things in a very simple business transaction sense, Max signed a contract to bring X amount of money to, you know, basically a full budget to drive that car in all of the races. And if that car is healthy and capable of running, in theory, he's paid for the opportunity to be in that car. And if you look at the sponsor as well, which is family related for Max, I'm not saying that Gallagher Insurance is going to sell an extra $1 million in policies as a result of him staying on track at Pocono for an extra however many laps, but that is in theory the reason that they are promoting that business on the car through buying that ride. So again, you would think that that was certainly part of the business equation. You look at Tony, and we know that Tony has some personal sponsors that continue to support him. I don't know how much of the budget for the 10 car there comes from him or the team. But the other thing I thought about with that is we know how popular Tony is. We know how big of a draw he is. And if you're looking at Tony, regardless of where he's running in the field, there are a lot of people in the grandstands who, if they aren't number one Tony Kanaan fans, certainly want to see him and also know that he's in the twilight of his career. How many more times are you going to get to see him? So get where Chip is coming from. I don't disagree with a lot of it. I really don't. From the financial side, why put us at further risk if there's no real reward to be had? But you also have to look up and realize that folks bought tickets to watch 21 drivers go around. We had a couple crash out early, lost a few more. There weren't, you know, a ton of cars left in the field at the time that Tony was pulled, but there are certainly, I would imagine, a fair number of folks in the grandstands going, well, what's that about? Why is he not out here for, you know, for us to enjoy? So I'm hoping if this were to happen again, a few of those other items that aren't financially related would be considered. All right, Ed Carpenter. Robin, I'm convinced Ed Carpenter would be better off running a road course race right now than an oval, just because of the bad luck. Again, the cartoon anvil has frickin' laser guidance on his number 20 Chevy, and it just seems like this is yet again another year for Ed to forget. And it's not as if he's driving poorly, it's not as if he hasn't been fast, but if there is a crash to get into or something wrong to happen, man, it just seems like that has been waiting for Ed almost everywhere he goes.
Yeah, he was the fastest in class. He was the qualified fifth behind the four Penske's, so obviously he has speed. And then kind of know where to go in the race. He said he can't wait for 2018 to get here fast enough.
All right, let's dive out of Gateway here, Robin. Been a busy week, keyboards have been overheating. Lots of news going on. Let's start with our boy Takuma Sato heading to Bobby Rahal's team for next year. I've heard there was a little bit of dissatisfaction on his current team's part of having a choice to make, whether to stay and wait and continue to wait to find out which engine manufacturer they'd be using, or go elsewhere to Bobby Rahal's team. And despite the fact that the decision was made to stick with Honda just shortly after Takuma made his decision to go to Rahal, but there was a little bit of what the hell in terms of him moving camp. What do you think about that move? Do you like it? And do you understand why Takuma, the defending Indy 500 winner, maybe doesn't feel like he should be sitting around waiting to find out what his current team's going to do for a seat next year?
I think that's probably it. And I think you even wrote it. I think when we wrote the story, you and I last Saturday, it was basically, I never got to talk to Sato, and Bob Rahal said basically, yeah, we're working hard on a second car, which is what we expect him to say. But I think with Sato, it maybe just was that uncertainty, and if Michael was going to go to Chevy, then he wanted to get the best deal he could. So I think that's what happened. I just think he got tired of waiting, and he made a move. And then, so I do think Michael, I don't think Michael was stringing people along. He might have been, since most everybody on his team swore they didn't know what was going on. And I think, obviously they haven't made it official yet, but you know, our story said he's going to stay with Honda, and I think that's going to prove to be true. It's just, I don't know, usually the Indy 500 winner comes back at the same team. It doesn't happen often, but it's happened before. I think it was Bob Schweikert, maybe? Maybe the last one? I'm not sure. It's just an interesting time for all the people that are shuffling and moving. And Sato was the big first name, and Michael was the big first domino.
And Rossi as well. So I know that at least with Michael, as we've been talking about, writing about for a couple months now, the potential for an insane season, the hell with silly season, definitely existed if Michael were to move to Chevy. Although Sato departing was not expected if Michael stayed with Honda. Still at least good to see that there's going to be things settling down a little bit on his team. Keep hearing that, we know that there is a fourth seat to fill, and also keep hearing that they want to expand to 5 full-time cars next year. So let's jump into some silly season stuff. And if you have visited racer.com this week, you probably have seen that a lot of stories have gone up. Robin and I kind of came to the decision of, if there are things that warrant a standalone story, we'll write them. And if there are things that are still, you know, a little less than ready to be put in print, we're just going to talk about them now. So you're actually going to get some silly season stuff straight here instead of in print. So, Kanaan, let's start with Tony. Nothing to announce yet, but we have certainly heard rumors of teams he might be heading to, Robin. What are those rumors, and which ones do you think might be stronger than others? Or are we still too soon to put a finer point?
Well, I think it's too soon, but I think Honda is definitely still in TK's corner. He still has the ability to raise sponsorship money, and I think he's pretty close to doing a couple of pretty good sponsorship signings here in the next 10 days or so. So could it be Andretti's fourth car? Absolutely. Could it be Dale Coyne's? Absolutely. Those are two people I think that have shown interest in TK. And, of course, there's AJ and Larry Foyt. They're still interested in trying to get him to their place. So I think those are the three teams that are probably in play. And I thought maybe Sam Schmidt, but I don't know. Sam's probably a possibility still, too. So there could be four teams that we're looking at when we're talking about TK.
If we look at Schmidt, nothing to announce there. We know that the second seat remains open, the one that Mikhail Lotion did have as a full-time ride. Haven't heard anything about Hinch returning, but I would be fairly confident we're going to see the mayor back with Sam. Some interesting stuff on who might fill that second seat, and that too. I mean, there are a lot of names, you know, like you just mentioned, Kanaan. I know that there continues to be a very strong desire within Robert Wickens to partner with his dear friend Hinch. Could that be a possibility? Definitely Schmidt, at least on the list that I'm keeping. I know that there are going to be at least two full-time cars on the grid next year. I'm just at this point not able to plug a confirmed name into either spot. What about Max Chilton? You and I spoke last week and said, is he going to stay in IndyCar? Is he going to go to sports cars? Is he going to switch teams? All right, well, we kind of know he's not going to be back with Ganassi, Robin. What are you hearing there?
Yeah, he won't be back with Chip. Well, I asked old Max last week. I said, okay, what can we write? You're going to start a new team. You're going to go to somebody else's team. You're going back to sports cars. He said, I want to stay here. I want to run IndyCars, but I can't tell you where that's going to be yet. So if he starts a team, Trevor Carlin will be a new IndyCar owner because I think that's obviously who he'd start with. But where else might he go? I don't know. Would Sam Schmidt take him? Would Michael Andretti take him? He brings a very nice sponsor to the table, so I think he's got some leverage. It's just, it's interesting because we thought for a long time, I mean, Hinch was really pushing for Rossi to come to Schmidt, and it just sounds like that just wasn't, it ended up maybe not going anywhere, I haven't heard Max's name mentioned at SPM, so I don't know. That's an interesting question, and he'll be the guy probably at the last minute at Sonoma that and lets us know.
Yeah, I've heard his name associated at Andretti as well. The Carlin thing has been the obvious destination all along, knowing his father is a major financier of that team, but Andretti is the other one that I've heard. I know Dale Coyne would welcome having him, so definitely someone whose presence and support is being courted and coveted by plenty of folks. Let's see. So we spoke about Foyt a little bit earlier, thinking that our boy Connor Daly would be back there. I spoke with Carlos Munoz here this week. He said, you know, really, this is my one option, and went on to a little bit of a sidebar that wasn't in the story about, you know, my days of bringing sponsors like he did at Andretti, those are behind me. So I could try and go and find sponsors, but that's just really not something I want to do anymore. So for Carlos, it's being a paid IndyCar driver or nothing, which I think is why he pinned his hopes of returning to Foyt as really the one big option for him. So if he is back, I think that's the place it would be. Otherwise, I don't know if he would be a full-time IndyCar driver going forward. We look at Andretti Autosport, Robin. We can plug Marco Andretti in, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Alexander Rossi. Still some fun stuff about who might be in a fourth and fifth car. You mentioned TK. We've obviously just spoke about Chilton. And I know that, you know, Zach Veach has been mentioned. I mean, look at this. The Andretti team, defending Indy 500 winners, they've kicked butt there for some time. We could pretty much plug in anybody with a budget or just an interest in wanting to be part of that team. Ganassi, that's one that I find really interesting. I'm hoping to have a story up here. I'm not sure whether it'll be up by the time the podcast goes up or after, but we know Scott Dixon's going to be back, and the other three cars right now have big question marks next to them. I have heard and have it on fairly good authority that World Endurance Champion Porsche factory driver Brendan Hartley, Le Mans winner Brendan Hartley from New Zealand, is in serious consideration for a seat alongside his countryman Scott Dixon, who he looks up to massively. And having seen Hartley drive in a variety of sports cars, knowing his experience as a Formula One test driver with Mercedes and before that with Toyota, that kid's the real deal. I don't know if I'd say he is going to be a threat right away, but provided something comes together with Ganassi, two Kiwis in the same team driving for Chip, one who has grown up looking up to Dixon, it's a pretty cool story right there, brother.
When I was talking to Chip on Monday, I said, you know, there's no guarantee you couldn't just be a two-car team next year, and he said, not at all. So he didn't downplay the fact that it could very well be Chip Ganassi goes from four to two cars next year. And I think, you know, Dixie, they still got to find Dixie a sponsor. And we think the NTT data is sticking with the 10 car, which by all accounts could certainly be the guy, the young man you were just talking about, that's on top of their list. The guy on top of their list is Felix Rosenquist, but he can't get out of his contract. So the next best thing, because I think Chip does have a, I think Chip doesn't think American drivers, I think he's, since the Montoyans and Artie days, he's always thought, you know, they're inferior or there's not enough good ones, and I'll hire only good ones, and I'd rather go get somebody else from, because they have better education, better schooling. I don't know what it basically his theory is, but I do have a quote from him from several years ago about how, you know, there aren't that many good American drivers and blah blah blah. So Ganassi goes to 2 cars, Michael Andretti goes to 5, Penske goes to 3. Maybe we'll get 1 or possibly 2 from Mike Harding, your buddy Mike Shank. Hopefully he'll get to do something someday. And Ricardo Juncos, I mean, Ricardo Juncos could use Max Chilton, couldn't he? I mean, that could get him really off the ground. But I think Max, now that he's been with Ganassi, he doesn't want to start with a new team that he's not maybe more familiar with. I think he has a lot of trust in Trevor Carlin because he ran with him in Europe. And obviously Carlin's got a great operation. Not that Juncos doesn't. It just seems like Max would be more comfortable with Carlin if that's what he chose to do.
Yeah, absolutely. The other interesting thing, too, is I know we've been looking at wondering if Esteban Gutierrez might land with Ganassi, and that still could be a possibility. When I spoke with him very recently, also learned that Mexican billionaire, telecommunications billionaire Carlos Slim is no longer a part of his support package. So whatever Esteban finds for a budget and can bring to an IndyCar team next year, it looks like it's just going to take a little while longer to put that together if you don't have a billionaire helping out.
But we got to have that. If they're going to go to Mexico City, we got to have that guy. He's got to be in a car. Got to have Gutierrez.
Let's talk quickly about Dale Coyne Racing, Robin. We know that Sebastian Bourdais is on a 2-year deal, so he'll be back next year. Craig Hampson will be there. Olivier Boisson, Mike Cannon will be there with the sister car, strong engineering team, all the great stuff we've seen this year. Ed Jones has told us not only does he want to be back, but that's the only place where he considers, you know, a realistic option to return. But we're also seeing for the first time in, ever, Dale Coyne Racing being treated as a real hotspot destination for drivers wanting to improve their current situation. I mean, we know Dale always talks to everybody, but it's cool to hear that whether it's a Charlie Kimball, a Max Chilton, a Kanaan, a you name it, there are real drivers looking at Dale's team, knowing that if they can get in alongside Bourdais, that's going to be a pretty powerful combination.
Yeah, I just would hate to see Ed Jones not come back because he's done such a magnificent job this year, and that kid's got it. And in the old days, it would have been no question having a rookie season like he had, but these aren't the old days. These are the realistic days where it takes money and sponsorship, and I don't know. Charlie Kimball's got less than probably half of what he's usually had from his sponsor, Novo Nordisk, and, you know, he's shopping and he's talking to everybody in the paddock. You know, I know he talked to Michael not long ago. Sage Karam, I saw him at Pocono. He wants to drive. I think he's been talking to Ed. You know, I think he calls Ed and keeps Ed. You know, I think he's always trying to stay on Ed's radar. And Ed Carpenter said last year, that guy belongs in the series full time. So, you know, that wouldn't be a bad idea. There's another young guy that needs to be in the series. Spencer Pigot certainly needs to be in the series full time. We don't know what's going to happen to him. And we really don't know the Ed Carpenter lineup, as you mentioned. So there's enough good young talent that have proven themselves, but that just doesn't seem to be enough right now.
I spoke with both Spencer and J.R. Hildebrand this week, and they didn't have much to say about 2018 and any developments on whether they would be asked back, have new contracts, etc. So that's one we're certainly paying attention to. We're hoping to hear good news from Gabby Chavez about Harding and a full-time entry for next year. Know that Zach Veach is someone who's been mentioned as a possible partner in that, as a second full-time car. spoke with Ricardo Juncos this week, who said, "I don't have anything to announce for IndyCar next year, but I am sending all three of my Dallara DW12s over to be updated to 2018 safety and all the upgrades and changes needed to the tub to accept the 2018 bodywork." So that's positive. He's also running Kyle Kaiser in Indy Lights, who simply needs to take the start and finish last this Sunday at Watkins Glen to earn that $1 million advancement prize from Mazda for winning the championship. So wouldn't be a shocker to see Kyle and his longstanding Road to Indy team continue in some sort of graduation next year together. We know that at our friends at Rahal Letterman Lanigan that rumors at least, that they might be holding on to Graham Rahal next year. Not confirmed, but we're hoping. There's a sliver of... And our boy Takuma Sato, that should be interesting to watch. Schmidt Peterson, we covered already, expecting Hinch to be back, but I know that they definitely want a more competitive second driver in the team. I've also heard, Robin, I know you've heard it too, they are considering floating the idea of a third car. I don't know how realistic that would be, but let's just say that with drivers coming in and out alongside Hinch, that team has shown that if everything is working well, they can be a force on a consistent basis. But I really do think that if they can lock in a high caliber driver next to Hinch, someone who isn't just simply providing a budget to be in that car, I think that team can go places. And Honda has also increased their support and faith in what they're doing. We definitely know what Team Penske is doing direction-wise. Spoke with Michael Schenck briefly, and he said that he absolutely wants to continue in IndyCar, still has to find a budget, but is planning to be back for his second go-round at the Indy 500 and would also want to try and do more races next year, not talking a full season, but some sort of expanded effort. Was also pleased to hear that Michael Andretti had re-upped with Honda, because that would make it a lot easier for Schenck as a Honda / Acura team to continue that relationship with Michael on the same manufacturer. So you take all those things, Robin. You take Santi Arusha, who's second in Indy Lights, telling us that he has about 95% of the budget to graduate to IndyCar. You take Veach telling us he's closer than ever. There's some other kids, Zachary Clayman DeMello, who's in Lights, who could be driving for Bobby Rahal at the season finale in Sonoma. And, I mean, you and I have been through a lot of IndyCar seasons, and we've gotten to the end of a number of them in recent years where there were crickets. There wasn't a whole lot to talk about. Maybe one kid would come up. Maybe there'd be a little bit of movement. Seems to me that if everything keeps heading in the right direction, Robin, we could have a handful of kids stepping up from Lights, either part-time or full-time, and still have some good silly season jumping around among the existing IndyCar teams. So, feeling encouraged, brother. Feeling really encouraged about development, growth, youth, and all kinds of fun in the works.
Well, as long as Piggott, and I want to see Sage Karen back in a car, and you know, those, and Ed Jones, the guys that, these young guys that have shown that they can drive, I want to see them get a chance. I don't want to see them, no offense to sports cars, but they're way too young to be sports car drivers. So we need more car owners. We might get them. We'll see.
All right, Robin. Well, last item for us to close on. You are the master of betting and gambling. I am not, but we will start off with you. Watkins Glen, who is spraying champagne from atop the podium on Sunday?
Scott Dixon. I went out on a limb, didn't I?
Wow. Is he getting a Chevy this weekend?
No, I just think he wasn't he very fast the last, he was pretty fast last year too, wasn't he?
Oh, he destroyed everyone last year with a Chevy, aero kit and engine. He just doesn't have one of those this year. Well, I'm going to go Pagano. I'm going to say the old Frenchman's blood is going to boil in some way, shape, or form beneath that painted smile. And how's this? If he doesn't win, that's going to be awkward, because you can't be almost winning Gateway, really grumpy that your teammate shoves it down the inside and takes the win, and not kind of push back at the next round. So I also wouldn't be surprised if our boy Power did something special. Definitely think this is going to be another Chevy weekend, but I mean, how's this? I'm always wrong in my predictions, so disregard everything I've said, and if I'm smart, I'd go bet my money on Dixon and follow where you're headed. So
that's why we watch, buddy. All right, we'll see you in Watkins Glen in 48 hours.